Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Look at it as a movie for posterity, and it becomes a worthwhile movie to savor, but nothing else, and you'll survive. Admire Civil War as an amazing film of imagination and cinematic verve, but nothing else, and you will too. That's Tom Schoen, Times of UK, talking about Civil War, our new feature film this week here on Cinephile. As far as our old movie is concerned, all-time classic, I Am Big. It's The Pictures That Got Small. Sunset Boulevard, unforgettable film from Billy Wilder. I'm mentioning it because the Colin Farrell show Sugar, which is on Apple TV Plus, limited series, featured a clip from Sunset Boulevard, one of my all-time favorites. It's such a great movie. And Sugar, we're 5 episodes in. I mentioned to Chris recently when I viewed it that I'd read something that there's going to be some big plot twist. No big plot twist yet. I'm 5 episodes in to an 8-episode series. So hopefully whenever that twist comes, won't be too bad. Also, new movies. Hey, it's the number one movie on Netflix right now. Anything But You. That's right. A rom-com with 2 stars who are easy in the eyes. We'll break that down for you as well. Anyone But You, because everyone's got Netflix. Everyone has easy access to this movie. As always, a pleasure to have you with us here on Cinephile. Please go to Apple Podcasts, where you can subscribe, rate, and review. Always good to have my buddy Chris Cody along for the ride. We have some planes, trains, and automobiles business to get to, but just to first and foremost, so you asked me for tickets for a baseball game. You said, can I get 2 or 4 tickets for a game in Atlanta? I go, no problem. So backstory, Chris had asked me a year previous, him and his dad were at the Final Four in Houston. I said, of course, no problem. I hit up one of my bosses. He's like, yeah. He goes, generally supposed to go to you, but whatever, it's fine. Give me your buddy's name. Tickets were great. So I had a great time. So I assumed you were taking a trip to Atlanta. I'm like, all good. So I text you maybe on the Friday of this last week. And I said, hey, let me know if you want to record the pod at a different time because you're going to be in Atlanta. You go, actually, it's not for me. It's for my cousin.
Yeah.
Is that okay? And I was like, man, I think it's okay. I mean, whatever. I mean, I get your thought process. Like, I have a buddy who works at MLB Network. He got me tickets before. I get it from my cousin.
Yeah.
I go, sure, no problem. But I text my boss, the same guy, and he was like, yeah, let me put you in touch with this other person. The other person sends me back a form and says, just fill this out. I look at the letter and it's like, credit card information. I'm like, no, I'm not paying for these tickets. Like, I know what Chris was thinking. Like, hey, you work at MLB, can you get me free tickets? I'm like, yeah, I'll get free tickets. If we're paying for them, forget it. I'll just go to StubHub myself. So I start thinking over, like, who can I get tickets? I go, Mark DeRosa lives in Atlanta. Let me text D-Row. I text D-Row. I'm like, any hookups to Braves? He's like, I know Frank Coor. I'm like, great. He texts Jeff Frank Coor. Goes by the nickname Frenchie. He's like, yep. Frenchie said, no problem. He gives me Frenchie's number. I text Frank Coor directly. Hey, man, 2 tickets? He's like, yeah, no problem. Like, of course, I'm a big fan of your work. Love you with Ron Darling, TBS playoffs. You guys are awesome. Go Braves. Yeah, I get a little love. He's like, yeah, for sure, man. All good. So we get to this past Monday, and he had said in the text, you'll get there around 4:30. Game's at 7:20 Eastern. Chris texts me maybe around 5. Because no tickets yet. And I'd given Chris's email. And you go, maybe you want to like hit him up. Like, just, hey, just don't try to be a pain.
How annoyed were you at me at that response? Because you hit me with the thumbs down.
Yeah, I hit you with an immediate dislike. I'm like, okay. So I'm like, that definitely got the message across to Chris. I'm like, no, I don't like that idea. But then an hour later, now it's around 6-ish. Now, this has happened before. Booney got me tickets. And I'm not kidding. 7:05 Eastern in the Bronx. I was outside. The tickets came at like 6:40. And I was texting him at 6:30. They're in the middle of BP. I'm like, hey, man, sorry to bug you. He goes, they'll be there. It just takes a while. I'm like, okay, they'll be there. I have a game to manage in 25 minutes. I'm like, no problem. And he was right. Same thing. You're hitting me up. I go, Cody, they'll be there.
So just picture now at like 6 and change, I've got my cousin and his son, his young son, just sitting outside of the Atlanta stadium. Just like, are they going to come? Like, I hate to do it. Everyone was feeling bad. My cousin is feeling bad for putting me in the spot. I'm feeling bad for putting you in the spot. Everyone's mad at Jeff Frank Coor, even though he probably gave it to someone else to do. So it's just like, he was then Jeff Frank Coor was feeling bad because the tickets didn't show up.
Right.
It was just chaos everywhere. So I did follow your advice.
I texted Frank Coor maybe an hour before, exactly what you said. Sorry to be a pain. My buddy doesn't have the tickets yet. And it was nothing. Then it got to like 6:45. And as soon as you said your cousin was outside, I just picture this little kid, cute little kid, trying to get into a go to a brace. And I go, I'll give you my credit card number. I'll buy the tickets. And I go, oh, $40 tickets, $100 level. Like, I'll give you $80 for now. Buy 2 tickets. You go, dude, it's fine. I'll do it. So you end up buying the tickets.
Yep, on Game Time.
Frank Gore hits me up an hour later. We're like in the bottom of the third. Did they get the tickets? I go, no. Where are you at? He's like, I'm in my son's T-ball game. I go, did you guys win? He's like, yeah, 15-11. And he goes, oh my God, I'm so sorry, man. He goes, I hit those guys. Hang on, stand by. He probably sends a fiery text to whoever the Braves PR. That guy's very apologetic. Goes, hey, whenever they want Delta Club seats, free food, free booze, let them know. So my question to you is this. Now that your cousin's been through this process, I don't know how far he lives from the Braves game, but I imagine traffic's
like 45 minutes out.
Yeah, that's not fun. And that stress and that anxiety. Yeah. And as you said, everyone felt bad. Now that Frank Coors said this, they'll give Delta Club tickets. You think your cousin will take up on this offer or once bitten, twice shy?
Oh, 1,000% he'll take up on Delta, the free all you can eat, all you can drink tickets. He's definitely in. Set. But you ready for this? I haven't even told you this yet, Adnan.
Yes.
I didn't tell him that I bought the tickets. He thinks that the tickets just showed up. I just didn't want to do the whole thing, make him feel bad about me having to go buy it. Like, he thought he was getting like a cool thing from Jeff Francoeur. Yeah. And I bought, like, they were like $45. Like, it wasn't even that expensive for tickets.
It wasn't horrible.
Honestly,
to be honest,
if I knew they were that cheap, I would have just bought it myself at the very beginning. I got for like $60 a ticket or something after all the fees. I got him like 2 good seats behind the third base line. And since he thought he got the tickets from Jeff Francoeur, the whole game he's texting me. He's like, I think I'm behind this person's parent. I think I'm near. He thought he was in a family section because he
because Frank Corrin said it was the family section.
He thought he was in the family section, even though I just bought him tickets behind the third base. So basically, I don't even know if I want to go to him and tell him about the Delta.
No, you can't.
I can go to him and just be like, hey, Frank Corrin loved having you there so much. He offered you more. Yeah.
Correct. Frank Corrin loves you. Next time you want Delta Club seats, let us know. And then I will directly text. And if Frank Corrin doesn't come through this time, we're going to unload on Frenchie. That's it.
And my cousin is a Levitard show listener. So I just would be, I don't know if he listens to Cinephile, but
he's not a Cinephile listener.
It would be funny if he texts me later this week, like, what?
He's not listening to him.
Good stuff.
I know. Because it's funny that you said that you didn't tell him, because I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, I'll buy them and not tell Cody. Like, I'll just buy them. Like, yeah, they just came through.
Yeah.
It says I'd never. I mean, no. Through work, it was whatever. Like, because I bought it, but they're going to reimburse me, whatever. Like,
it's honestly a selfish move because it makes me look less cool that, like, the tickets didn't come through. So I wanted to still seem cool. Like, I got a hookup, Adnan Virk, Jeff Francoeur, family section. Yeah. So I just was like, they came in just now. They're coming your way right now. And they were just tickets I bought because Jeff Francoeur's assistant screwed
us. I think it's a cool thing. I think you're being generous and avoiding a potential disaster. Because I did look. The cheapest tickets were like $9. Like, if worse came to worse, your cousin would have paid $9 and sat in the outfield and watched
Honestly, if I was him and I got there that early with my son, I would have bought 2 $9 tickets just to get inside the stadium. And now, now you're watching BP. And then when the tickets arrive, you see what seats they are and you go to those seats. I mean, that's...
It's not a bad call. But the overall takeaway, I'm with you as well. Surprise, the Braves ticket's not that expensive. Like, good seats, $40, that's not bad. With fees, $6. I can afford $100 for a pair of tickets. All right, the next matter of business before we get to the movies. This is very important. Be careful when it comes to compliments, specifically of Mike Ryan. So I listened to Local Out the other day, 40 minutes of incredible Panthers talk. You did a little bit, but not much. It was mainly Mike carrying it. And a little bit of Izzy, not much. Roy, I know, knows this stuff, obviously. But it was mainly Mike. So I was genuinely surprised how knowledgeable it was about hockey.
No, Mike's good. Mike's all in with hockey right now.
No, and I text him. I go, dude, like, I can tell when a guy kind of knows a little bit, but you were like, and it obviously was focused on your team, but even there was like enough tangential stuff that you knew McKinnon's going to win the Hart. Roy chiming in the fact there's 2 guys who win most valuable player. Like, that's impressive. Lester B. Pearson and the Hart Trophy for real hockey fans. But he's throwing in stuff like, you know, you got to beat Bob up high. He's looking at past history. You mentioned Fat Pat with regards to Maroon. Like, there's enough good, like, solid hockey talk. So I texted Mike a game, and I was impressed with the hockey talk. 40 minutes, like, I thought maybe 10, 15 minutes. You guys went the whole time. No heat talk.
That's how you got in the chat.
Yeah, so he texts me back. He's like, oh, thanks so much. And he goes, by the way, our group chat is hot fire. He goes, I'm going to put you in there. I go, what? He goes, you'll be our first Canadian Leafs fan. I go, not a Leafs fan. I go, common mistake. I go, Flyers, Eagles. But no, I go, not Leafs. He goes, okay, no problem. Within seconds, I'm on the group chat. And he says, hey, meet Adnan Virk, Canadian and Flyers fan. We want to have him in the show. And somebody else responds, what do you think of Witty? Now, Mike immediately texted me, F Witty.
That's like that's how you get it. That you get accepted among the crew if you know how to react to Witty, because we're an anti-Witty chat.
Okay, so I wouldn't have known necessarily, because I do like Witty, fan of Cinephile and friend of Cinephile, and he's been on the program before. So if you had asked me, like, on the street. What do you think of Witty? I'm like, oh, I love Witty. But I realized, I'm like, well, this has to be a test. And thankfully, Mike immediately texted an F Witty. Like, he sucks. I go, okay. So I just went with the Flyers joke. Hey, being a Flyers fan, greater than Witty. Pass the test. You put a Couturier. I'm like, nice. All right. So Cody's in. Let me tell you something. I went to go coach my son's baseball game. He's seven. Okay. It's a three inning game, 11:45 to 1:15. I went back 37 messages. I go, are you kidding?
That's light work, dude. 37?
In an hour and a half, I go, wait a second. These guys all have kids. Like, these guys have things to do. And weekends, you know, weekends are busy when you have kids. Like, forget about weekends. I can't socialize on weekends. I got kids stuff. So I'm like, these guys are just firing away. I'm like, wow. And the craziest part is, and I'm trying to keep, like, I can't keep, I don't know who these people are. They're all 301, three. I don't remember any of the numbers. The only numbers I know, you and Chris Felica. Like, I have Chris Felica's number. I was like, oh, yeah. I go, Felica's in this group, Chuck. I do have Felica's number. Okay, that's a Felica comment. He's chirping the Leafs. I like that. Attaboy, Felica.
Dude, it's honestly a who's who. You want me to start rattling names? I don't even know if I'm allowed to do this.
Go ahead, give me some names, dude, because I don't know any of these people.
John Isner's in it.
Yeah, I was shocked by that. The tennis
Marty buzz, Fish is in it. Josh Appel, who's like a local broadcaster down here. Izzy okay. Gutierrez is in it. Stefano Fasaro, who's a soccer guy for ESPN. Yeah, you know, I'm just saying they all can't beat John Isner. But Kevin Clark.
He's going to the hot Kevin, I'm a tennis guy. Isner and Marty Fish, you already have.
Kevin Clark, he's in ESPN on Around the Horn all the time. Like, I'm just saying, it's sure. relatively, it's a who's who. But
it was insane.
I need you to tell me off air which one's the bear because I don't know which one's his number. So
okay, yeah. This is the only guy, the only people I have, and you weren't commenting much. You'll give like a like, maybe a comment.
Yeah.
And Mike is the thing too. He's big on these pools. He got me once before, and I told you, I go, I don't do any pools. I remember you were shocked.
Like, oh yeah,
go,
every day we're doing the daily DraftKings pools.
Yeah, Mike loves these. I go, I don't do pools. Like, all good. Like you do you, but I'm like, I don't do this stuff. So right, I just see this post: Mike, John Isner, Cowboy, Stefano Fasaro, Josh, Felica,
those are the
Fonzie,
people in the
Mr.
pool
Brightside.
So far. Yeah, those are the people in the pool so far.
This is I can't believe you guys have this much time.
Oh dude, it's crazy. Now I want to know, is have you silenced the chat yet? Are you getting dings for all these?
All of them. So I'm on Saisti, my buddy Anthony Record, MLB Tonight, and I bring up the group chat. He goes, oh my God, the worst. And he goes, I'm on that group chat, a bunch of dads, they add me. And I he goes, I'm like, I'm blunt. I go, what do you mean? He goes, there's like 12 comments within an hour and I just leave. I go, no, I can't leave. I go, okay, then everyone sees. Adnan Burke has left the conversation. F that guy. I go, Michael, kill me. He'll be mad.
Yeah.
No, I didn't ask him in the group chat, but if I leave, they'll get mad at me. She goes, just silence it. So I click on the group chat.
Hide
and
alerts.
I go to this right here and I click on this.
I can't see your phone, but.
No, that's okay.
Okay.
If you can see it, it looks like the.
Oh, you just like hide notifications kind of thing?
Yeah. So I click on that and it's done nothing.
No, look, you got to click on. All right. We're doing this on a visual medium. See how I'm in the chat right now? Look at my phone. Tap on top here where all the names are. Tap all the names. And then this thing pops up and you can click hide alert.
Hide alert.
Now click that green.
We did it.
Now you'll stop getting notifications. And when you pull up your text, you'll still see the group and you'll see, oh, there's 27, but it's not going to alert you.
It won't be constantly pinging me.
It's just like now you can go check in when you want.
But this is what I'm about to say. So like if a game's on, I'm watching him, then I'm in. Like, trust me, I'm in on a good, funny group chat. Like tonight, Panthers Lightning game 5, 7 o'clock.
Oh,
I'm
crazy.
On air. Yeah, if I go to 8:30, I'll click it on. Look, what are these guys got? Yeah. There's funny comments. There's jokes. I'm all good for like a laugh. It's just throughout the day. It's just
it's constant and
hundreds of messages.
Dude, 37 is such light work. I will like go to dinner with my family, and it's like 7 o'clock, like during a prime time, like hockey playoffs are going on. I get back. Yeah. I don't look at my phone all meal. I get back in the car like an hour and a half later, and there's like 228 messages or something. It's like, I'm telling you. And Mike, to Mike's point, the group chat is having a moment right now. Like everyone's in it. Everyone's talking in it. Like it hasn't always been this lively, but right now it's just, and Mike's adding people every day. He added one of my friends a few weeks ago. And my friend is just like you. He hates it. He's like, why did you put me in this thing? It is the worst. I can't follow anything. All they talk about is the slate. Cause it's a running joke in the thing that every day the slate is amazing. So like every day someone in the chat will be like, did you see today's slate? And then everyone will be like, it's great. Like, it doesn't matter if it's actually great. It's just what they do. I'm with you. I don't chime in a lot. I'm more just observing it and like.
Yeah, you're just observing.
Yeah, and then during the games, I'll get into it. But yeah, it's a lot.
Well, I love the passion. And go Panthers. Hopefully you guys knock out the Lightning in 5. We'll find out by the time this posts if the Panthers win tonight. Hopefully it's easy peasy and it's taking care of business. One other bit of business I should mention here. This is the final Chris Cody episode of Cinephile.
Wow.
Right? Last dance.
I mean, I might come in. Like, it's the last one where I'm spearheading the editing and stuff.
Okay, so maybe an occasional cameo, but Dan Le Batard called me last month. Listen, I need Cody. I need him as much as possible. I said, I totally get it. So 78 episodes at ESPN with Dan Stanzik, 99 with Joe Engelbrecht and Cadence 13, 143 with Chris Cody. This is 320 episodes of Cinnabon. You've eclipsed those guys by a fair margin, I might
just
add.
In sheer number of episodes. I feel like both of those guys contributed way more than I did. But I've had a lot of fun doing this every week with you. Like I said, I'm not going anywhere. You'll still be around. I'll still be around, but... You're the best, Adnan. This has been a lot of fun.
I appreciate you, Cody. I got to give a couple compliments, genuinely. I can tell you this off air, but I'd rather talk to you face-to-face over a Zoom because that's more personal. You did something no producer's ever done before. I've been in this business for 22 years on television, radio, podcast, whatever. Before we worked together, and we only met a couple of times in passing. You know, I was in Miami one time. I was there for the All-Star game. One time you ran out when I was there for DAZN. You saw me, ran out, just said hello for a couple minutes. You said, hey, before we get started, I'm going to send you like a questionnaire. And I said, what's a good idea? You sent me a list of questions about myself. He said, this way we can get to know each other a little bit. So it was like, where'd you go to school? What are your favorite sports teams, favorite meal? I thought that was a good personal touch. Where did you come up with that? Have you done that before with other people?
I've done it before. It's just kind of like, you know, I was nervous at the beginning of this. Like, you know, you're Adnan Virk, dude. Like, you got bona fides in this industry. And I was just like, and I'm not, as people have learned over these 140 episodes, movies are not my specialty. So I just, you know, I was always a little insecure about this. So I just wanted to... You know, get to know you a little better. But I feel like we've got, if there's anything that's happened in these 140 episodes, we've made a friend, each of us.
Yes, 100%. We're definitely friends and we're boys. And as you said, you'll be here popping up on Cinephile, no longer spearheading. And of course, I'll be on the Dan Le Batard show, I hope as much as possible, breaking out David Sampson. The one thing you have to help me on this, though, is because Dan had said to me, he wants me to fill in the summer. Now, how are those guys with their summer vacation requests? He goes, I want you to fill in either for me or for Stu. Because there's two types of people. There's the people who give their vacation requests like January 1st, and they go, here's this week I need off, I need Thanksgiving off. And then there's the guy who on Friday goes, hey, I'm taking next week off. Which one is Dan and Stu? I feel like they're the latter.
Dan generally plans it in advance, and then Stu Gotch will just latch on to Dan's vacation. So basically, 3 weeks before Dan's planned vacation, Stu Gotch will have a reason why he needs that same week off.
Right.
That's so basically how it goes.
August 8th to 28th, dog days of August. If those guys take time off, I'm your man. Sign me up, and we'll reunite in Miami. It'll be you, me, Amin, Itzy Gutierrez.
Love it.
It'll be great. As long as you give me 3 weeks' notice, I'll be fine. One of our favorite movies, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, for me and Chris. I mentioned it, and Chris's mom, by the way. Oh, by the way, I got to mention your dad. This is a disaster. So this is horrible. My buddy John Chick, who always listens to the podcast, Irving Ho, avid listeners, they text me the picture of your dad. I go, holy smokes, you need to find out what happened. So I don't know if people want to reveal this as of yet because your dad's going to sell this for some downloads, but is Greg Cody okay? What can you tell us at this time?
All right. I feel like I can almost say this because this episode doesn't come out till Tuesday and Greg Cody will be on the Le Batard show then, but I've been embargoed on talking about this on Monday, but the people won't hear this Monday. So he fell. All right. My dad, it wasn't drinking related like the last time. Like there was, my dad's had a few falls. A couple years ago, he fell in the bush when he was hammered. I posted the video of. And then more recently at High Lie, he actually just fainted from coughing. He got like, jeez. So that's actually what happened here. Another fainting spell. He has asthma. And when he gets these coughing fits, he tries to stifle them. And then when he stifles the coughs, he loses oxygen and he's fainted now. This is his fourth faint. And this is by far the worst one. All the other ones have kind of happened when he was either sitting or this one happened like in a road. Like out on a street. So he like face planted and it's brutal. I mean, it's not funny at all, actually. I know like we kind of try to turn it into content.
Look at this picture right now. Like it is a swollen, completely covered eyes.
That picture's last Wednesday. So he already looks better now. It's already looking a lot better. But he went to the doctor, got his brain checked, got his like his cheekbone checked, got his everything checked, basically. His heart. Just to make sure it wasn't heart related. All the doctors keep kind of just throwing their arms up like, dude, your heart's fine. Your brain's fine. It's just, you can't stifle these coughs. He gets embarrassed when he's in public and he's coughing. So he tries to like not cough and he loses oxygen and it's just.
Dude, that's scary.
No, it's very scary. And luckily the doctors keep kind of saying that there's no big issue here. It's just you have asthma. So this makes you cough sometimes and you got to just cough. Like stop trying to fight the cough. So. It's scary as anything in one hand, and on the other hand, the doctors are telling us that he is okay. So, you know.
But I get paranoid. I feel like he's going to be with somebody all the time. Like if he's driving.
Oh no,
and
dude!
He's pressing a cough. Like forget it.
It hasn't happened. Knock on wood. In driving, like this week, tomorrow, I'm driving him to the studio. Like I just was like, but Yeah, it is scary. Like, there's no doubt about it. And I found him. I literally was walking out of where he was like 5 minutes after him, and I see some guy standing over my dad in the street. Like, my dad's holding his head.
Ooh.
And at the time, there was no swelling yet. So I walk up to my dad, and he's just got a little gash on his head. So I'm like, would you like bump your head on your car or something? Like, I was almost downplaying it because it didn't look that bad. It was just a little gash on his forehead. And the guy's like, no, he face planted. And I'm like, really? But then the next day, it was all like, it all swelled up. So it was,
oh my God.
Yeah, it's scary and a little funny all at the same time. But mostly scary.
Yeah, I would say 90% scary, 10% fun. The only humor of it is that your dad is now using it for downloads.
The humor is that literally an hour after it happened, before he like got to tell my mom he was okay, it was like, oh, take a picture so we can have a good promo for this week's episode. Yeah.
Always for the sake of the show. Thank God he's all right.
Go, if you want to hear the full story of what happened, go to the Greg Cody show.
Okay, Greg Cody should get the full story in detail. And thankfully, he's okay. And hopefully, this stops. Yes. Like you say, get the asthma under control. If you have to cough, just cough, Greg. It's okay. Don't be a hero. Mm-hmm. It's fine. The movie that you, me, and your mom love, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So in the Steve Martin documentary on Apple TV+, Steve Martin, if you haven't seen it, he gets emotional. He says, you know, John Candy, I loved him. He was a wonderful guy, very sensitive, very loving. He said he does this speech at the end of the movie. He said, I was choked up. Like, I'm fighting back tears the whole time. And when I saw the movie, it's just two lines, right? He just says, Marine, I don't have a home. Marine's been dead for 8 years. Here's the full speech. And I want you to think about John Candy. I know you've all seen Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So think about that last scene. Neil Page is on the subway. He's having images. You know, I don't have a home. I don't have a home. He gets off the subway. He goes back. He sees Dell. And then picture this. Neil leans back from the truck. He closes the lid. This is Dell. I didn't have much family. A brother in Montana. Some cousins. Marie's folks died back to back the year after we married. They were pretty old. She was a late child. We didn't have kids. We had plans. He smiles sadly. She wanted three kids, two boys and a girl. She couldn't have any, though, so we didn't. And I guess it's just as well. I number about 300 motels at my home. I sort of attach myself to people from time to time, like with you, especially around the holidays. I can take it in March, July, October. I don't mind it. Then it gets hard about this time of year. I've never had much of a chance to be a family man, and it gets really hard. You know what it is? Neil shakes his head. He's about to cry. Dell continues. I don't get to give any of myself to anybody. It's not the getting I miss, it's the giving. I sat on that plane with you, and I thought about you heading home to be with your people. And Tuesday night, when you were in the shower, and I looked at the picture of your kids, man, I thought you got to be the luckiest man on earth to go home and put those little guys on your knee and hug them and kiss them. I'm 39 years old. I never had that, and I never will. I'm sorry about all this. I just kind of lost control this time. Every year since Marie's been gone, I've gotten closer and closer to losing it. Usually I head to her church. I can feel like I'm part of something when I'm in a church. This time, I guess I didn't get to the church fast enough. I just couldn't let go. He looks at his watch. I vowed I'd never burden anybody with this, and I broke my vow, held you away from your family, caused you a hell of a lot of trouble. You better run. Neil stares at the floor, devastated by Dell's story. I mean, I'm picturing John Candy the whole time. Like, that would have been an incredible
ending.
That
was moving. Like, you even got a little emotional there. Was that? Were you acting there, or was that real?
Yeah,
that was...
I'm emotional reading that stuff, man. God, now I'm teary.
Yeah, that is really cool.
That's amazing to think about. I don't know. I'm assuming the video doesn't exist anywhere, but I wish we could see that. John Candy, what a great actor. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, man. Like, not just a funny movie, but an emotional movie, right? Hits you hard there at the end. It's so powerful. All right, let's get to some movies, shall we? Civil War, currently in theaters, and I finally got my chance to go see it. I was... not skittish, but I didn't really know much about the movie. It came out April 12th, it came out a couple weeks ago.
Heard it's bad.
Yeah, I like the honest take. I try to time it, as you know, because I hate trailers. So 11:30 start time. I walked in 11:50, 11:52, movie's already starts. And now I'm kind of annoyed. I'm like, you know what? I should have just gone 15 minutes trailers. But I'm telling you, man, it's more like 20 minutes. You look at the commercials and everything else. So I should have walked in 11:45. I walked in 11:52. But I took a picture of it right away because my buddy Carlton Gillespie, I know, had seen it and he loved it. So after the movie, I text him, what did I miss? Here's where I walked in. It's Kristen Dunst, some dude, and this older black gentleman having a conversation on a couch. What happened before that? He's like, oh, you just missed Nick Offerman, who plays the president. I go, Nick Offerman's the president? He's like, yeah, Nick Offerman's the president. He just announced that there's a civil war, that California and Texas have seceded, and now we're at war. I'm like, okay. I mean, I would have liked to have seen that 5 minutes, but I think I got the gist of it. Like, I can figure it out. The movie is called Civil War, and they are a media group going to investigate exactly what's happened. So it's media people. And I know while working in the media, sometimes people who don't work in the media think there's too many movies about people in the media doing good things. So sometimes when I watch a movie, I go, oh, I like the fact that journalists are doing good things. I go, eh. And there's people who hate the media, go, oh, great. Another movie about the media making themselves look good as the media. Like, I love Good Night and Good Luck. Right when I talked to it with KO, and one of my friends was like, oh, yeah, what a surprise. You work in the media. You like the movie about the media looking so great and heroic. But regardless, as I can put that aside, I thought it was a good film. I mean, it really touches on topical subjects because this country right now is so splintered, right? I don't mean just politically. I just mean everything, right? Whether it's obviously politics, right versus left, Republican, Democrat, Trump, Biden. You look at what's happening in Gaza, you're pro-Israel or pro-Palestine. It seems like nothing's binary, right? You're either one or the other. So this whole concept of the country being at war has some element of truth to it. Now, this is quite a hell of a leap to imagine that the entire country is fighting and like it's just barren everywhere you go. And like there's literally the military's taken over. And only because of the media, they've got like media on their, you know, on their shields, on their helmets and stuff, that they have that access to what's happening. But I thought it was an imaginative film. To your point, I think this is where you're going with people that you said didn't like it. I'm expecting one thing and it kind of went in a different direction. Like I'm expecting, okay, it's an action movie. It's literally who are the two sides. You never find out what exactly the Civil War is about. There isn't necessarily a resolution, but I did find it to be dark and atmospheric. And the director, Alex Garland, is a good director. He did Ex Machina, which I really enjoyed. So I recommend Civil War. I'd give it 3 Maple Leafs, but at the same time, felt like there was some plot holes, some more information that was missing. I will say Jesse Plemons, Kirsten Dunst's real-life husband, who now, by the way, is looking way too skinny. F that guy. He's lost like 50 pounds. I liked him better when he was chubby, but he's got an incredible cameo. He is great. And I was like, man, this guy's stock went from like, oh, you're the chubby Kirsten Dunst guy to like, no, now he's in Scorsese movies. He was in The Irishman for a couple of scenes. He was in Killers of the Flower Moon. He's got a riveting cameo in this. Props to Jesse Plemons. Did like you better when you were chubbier. But the point is this. It's a movie that's got some skill to it. It's got some dash. But I want to know, Chris, what have people said to you, those who said they didn't like it?
I don't have much else than that. I've seen at our studio, like I think Billy saw it, Mike Ryan. Yeah. Like I've just heard a lot of people saying it's not good.
They're down on it. Yeah, I could definitely see if you're looking for one and it goes the other way, and maybe there's a little bit of a lack of resolution. But I enjoyed it. I think it's a good film. And like I said, topical and certainly thought provoking.
The preview. The preview makes it good look good because yes. it just looks like your worst nightmare.
Yes.
That's what the preview does. It's like, oh, I could kind of see this happening someday. This sounds awful.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I'm sure, like, maybe if you're expecting, like, an Independence Day or something, it's not like that. It's not like aliens are under attack. It's more about, again, this country being so splintered and casting against itself. And just that feeling of minute to minute, not knowing how you're going to live, because which side are you on, especially in the media, because they're supposed to be right down the middle, which is ironic, because the media is never down the middle. Either it's, you know, Fox News or MSNBC, it's right, left, et cetera. But they're trying to navigate their way. And like I said, it's definitely intense. Richard Brody of New Yorker, clamorously making its claim on viewers' attention by subject matter alone rather than by artistry or worldview. The film is a kind of advertisement for itself. And also, this top critic, I believe this was Rex Reed Observer said, the script's dispassion is what gives the film its oxyacetylene-like power as prophecy. Wow, that's a big word.
I don't know any of those words.
Let's go from those big words to something a little more simple. This one, I swear to God, was just for you. I said, you know what? This is Cody's farewell episode in Manner of Speaking. Anyone but you. It's on Netflix. Everyone has Netflix. This is an easy watch. Hour 40. Something I can watch with my wife. You know, she complains. You watch all these movies without me. No problem. I got one for us to watch together. We're going to watch a really handsome guy with his shirt off 90% of the movie. You in for this, honey? Great. So you get to stare at Glenn Powell, and I'll check out Sydney Sweeney. Everybody wins. Everybody gets to watch this movie. And again, I went in with low expectations, but it's got its moments. Anyone but you, 55% Rotten Tomatoes. But 87% audience score. So this one of those movies, hey, we're not making it for the critics. We're making it for the general audience. And as I said, it's the number one movie on Netflix. Here's what it's about. B is Sydney Sweeney. Ben is Glenn Powell. They look like the perfect couple. But after an amazing first date, something happens that turns their fiery, hot attraction ice cold until they find themselves unexpectedly thrust together at a destination wedding in Australia. So they do what any two mature adults would do, pretend to be a couple. It's from Will Gluck, who's a director I'm not familiar with. They mentioned in the opening how they first meet cute. So they're in a coffee shop. Powell's in line. Sydney Sweeney's trying to use the bathroom. He can't use the bathroom without ordering something. She's trying to get a key. Powell very quickly says, oh, for my girlfriend here, can I get, what did you want again, babe? Was it tea latte, whatever it was? Okay, great. Oh, thank you so much, sweetheart. Yeah, let me get the. So he very sweetly orders her a drink so you can use the bathroom, gets the key. She goes in there. But then she spills right in like her private area. So she's like, oh my God, this looks like a disaster. So she's in a little bit of physical comedy, jeans off, is putting her pants up against the air dryer, trying to clean them up. which I think is just an excuse to get Sydney Sweeney in her underwear in the first 5 minutes of the movie. But whatever. Okay, let's get there. Oh, no, I'll be right in the second. Okay, let me dry my pants. Okay, fine. She leaves. They hang out a little bit. He picks her up. They go back. Nothing really happens, but, you know, they spend the night. But she darts. A dash and dime. Before he wakes up, she's gone.
Classic.
So then, classic move, right? You think, I got something going on with this girl. No, she left me. She goes back to go check up on him and overhears a conversation in which he's ripping her. He's like, F that chick, man. Like, she sucks. He's like, oh, she's useless. I'm like, wow. And so we have the title, Anyone But You. So now she doesn't like him. He doesn't like her. But they have to get together because, of course, it's a movie. But how do they actually get together? Well, the sister, so it's her sister, Sydney Sweeney's sister, who's a lesbian, marrying her girlfriend. And that friend is friends with Powell. So they meet each other again at the bar. Oh, it's you again. Oh, geez, I hate you. Okay, fine. Well, whatever. We're going to be together in Australia for this wedding. Speaking of lesbians, my buddy John LeBoy, blown away by last week's revelation by Cody that you've been with two women after dating you.
Dose.
I've stuck with the same sex. It's an unbelievable story. But anyways, these two lesbians are looking to get it on, just like Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell. I mean, this couple is unbelievably telegenic. Like, it's a little bit almost too frustrating. Like, dude, this guy is like a 10-pack. Although they get some good one-liners back and forth. At one point, she mentions the fact he's on a creatine heavy to hide his dick insecurity, which is a funny little shot at him. They're on the same plane together. He's first class. She's not. Again, a little bit more physical comedy. There's really two scenes that I can highly recommend without spoiling them. One is a really good gesture physical comedy where, again, they're pretending to be together. And Ben is asking B, can I put my hand on your right buttock? She goes, yeah, sure. So he's grabbing her ass. She's like, no, wait, you got to like kind of pat it. You don't just squeeze my ass. She starts squeezing his ass. She sticks her finger up his ass. And he says, oh, man in the woods. I'm like, oh, my God. This movie took a turn. And then I won't spoil what happens, but there's some other good physical comedy there. Again, ladies, he gets naked. That's the good news. Glenn Powell, fully naked.
You don't see it, though.
Again, much like your thought with John Cena, is he wearing a sock? There's a thought there as well. As far as Sydney Sweeney, a lot of bikinis, but you're seeing more of Powell than of Sweeney, if that's what you're looking for. But the point is this. That's a funny scene. There's one surprisingly romantic scene that actually takes place at night in a buoy. I was like, oh, it's not quite Sean Candy playing Jason Automobiles, but it's a nice, sweet scene. And you've got the beautiful skyline of Australia. It does make you feel like taking a trip to Australia until you realize it's a 16-hour flight. My God, kill me. I love the Australian Open. I ain't flying that far for tennis. Bottom line, it's predictable. It can be a little mundane at times. My wife was definitely groaning the last 30 minutes. She's like, oh my God, this movie is so dumb. This is so ridiculous. I'm like, well, you know these things are happening. Of course, it's going to be a little bit sweet, a little bit syrupy. Maybe I'm just being kind. Maybe I'm a humbug. I'll give it 2 Maple Leafs. Honestly, it's kind of like a plane ride. It's a decent watch. It's quickly forgettable. We feel like a good rom-com. They don't make a lot of rom-coms these days, okay? It's not like an era of When Harry Met Sally or Sleepless in Seattle. So you don't get a lot of these kinds of movies. But if you want to, perfectly fine diversion, hour 40 on Netflix. It's perfectly adequate. Anyone But You, 2 Maple Leafs, currently available on Netflix. Cody, what are the odds you're going to watch this movie?
I mean,
you could think of two big reasons why. Thank you very much.
I mean, you kind of downplayed it with you see more of him, but whatever.
But on that point, by the way, my wife says to me, she got a pretty impressive rack. And I stayed quiet. I was like, yeah, I mean, they're definitely a lot of cleavage. And she's got to have had them done. Like, what do you mean? She's like,
Did your wife say rack, or is that just how you're phrasing it?
I'm trying to think. I think she might have said rack, actually. Normally, and that's not a term she would normally use. What would she say? She'd probably say
chest,
bust.
Chest, maybe?
Chest. Yeah, chest or bust. Yeah. I was surprised.
Very voluptuous.
She did drop rack. Yeah, voluptuous. Yeah. But she says, I was nonplussed. I gave no reaction. I'm like, she was probably had them done. I go,
I love you just being like, they're okay.
Yeah, that's fine. Like, has she had them done or not? Like, put on the poll, Guillermo. I'm like,
I vote no.
I don't think I'm with you. I think she's naturally well endowed, yeah. And she's staying in there. She's using it to her advantage. I mean, she's the it girl right now. There's no question about it. And Powell, by the way, this guy's a good actor. He was in the Richard Linklater minor league baseball movie. Everybody Wants Some. He's also in a movie called Hitman, which is coming on Netflix next month. It's from Richard Linklater. I'm really looking forward to that movie. So I'm very much looking forward to Hitman. Speaking of, even Ty Burr was saying, my man, in his review saying, hey, Glenn Powell is going to be a big star. So if you want to say, hey, I remember him when, this would be actually a good movie to watch just for that reason.
Based on a little research that I was forced to do for the show, says Sydney Sweeney wanted a breast reduction in high school, but now calls her bosom her best friends.
Confirmation, not fake.
So like, if you want the reduction in high school, they're probably not fake, right? That means they got large
Correct.
Early. Yeah.
Exactly. You're the real
poor girl.
Poor girl. Ty Burr, by the way, his review, the two stars are easy on the eyes. And on a scene by scene basis.
So he's not talking about Sydney there. Okay.
Yeah, he don't want to be told much of a perv. So he's got the two stars. I mean, he's really good looking, too.
I thought you meant I was making a boob joke.
No, the two stars. Those two stars are also easy in the eyes. On a scene-by-scene basis, as charming as you are from a big jar of marshmallow fluff, you have good chemistry. Caroline Seedgirl, for as effective as Sydney Sweeney's lethargic blankness is in Euphoria, it's not an especially great quality for rom-com lead. I will say, pretty robotic delivery. I don't think she's a great actress. I mean, very bland in her delivery. Her acting does leave us something to be desired. David Sims of The Atlantic, both leads are attractive, but their personal chemistry is non-existent. Sweeney feels particularly uncalibrated for the film's light, wacky tone, delivering every line with flattened portentousness, even as she's meant to be scatterbrained. That's a great delivery. Flattened. If someone says to me, what do you think of her acting? I'm like, she delivers every line with flattened portentousness. I'm like, I know what you mean. You know what I mean after you watch Anything But You. All right, real quick on Sunset Boulevard. It's an absolute classic. By the way, I didn't mention my wild card. My dad's favorite show, Papa Work and I Love, 60 Minutes. Last week on 60 Minutes, Kevin Hart. He was fantastic. Really funny. Good interview with Anderson Cooper. So in honor of Kevin Hart, who I've interviewed twice, a real treat for all you Meadowlark fans, because this was way back in the ESPN era, which was like 2016, 2017. So we're dusting off 2 7-year-old Kevin Hart interviews just for your pleasure. In case you want more Kevin Hart, in case you're like my dad, probably doesn't watch a lot of his movies, enjoy him in 60 Minutes just for you, Papa Burke. You can check out Kevin Hart coming up on Cinephile from years ago. He was a great guest, obviously very funny, very charming. Met him once in person, was on his phone most of the time, had about 6 guys with him, but still good. Very much of a pro. He could look at his phone, answer his question without missing a beat. No problem. The second time I interviewed him on the phone, that was after the whole Oscars backlash, which they mentioned in 60 Minutes. There was a gay joke he made years ago. He got some backlash against it, had to step down as host of the Oscars. Before the interview, I remember the PR person goes, hey, no Oscars questions. If you listen to the interview, I didn't phrase it Oscars, but I kind of made my point, and he was totally cool with it as well. Like, I was like, oh, hosting, ESPYs, how's that going for you? And he totally answered it well. So you'll have that in just a second. Anyways, quick thought here on Sunset Boulevard. Man, it's an all-time classic. Again, a quick blip of it was showed in Sugar. One of the reasons why I love Sunset Boulevard is it has an incredible opening. I mean, what kind of a movie starts out with a dead guy floating in a pool? That's Sunset Boulevard, which is a 74-year-old movie. I mean, we're getting ahead of the 75th anniversary of this iconic film from Billy Wilder. The story is this. An aging silent film queen refuses to accept that her stardom has ended. She hires a young screenwriter to help set up her movie comeback. The screenwriter believes he can manipulate her, but she soon finds out he is wrong. The screenwriter's ambivalence about the relationship and her unwillingness to let go leads to a situation of violence, madness, and death. And of course, Gloria Swanson is absolutely iconic. Unforgettable performance as Norma Desmond, the silent film star who used to be big. William Holden plays Joe Gillis. He is a screenwriter who just happens to show up at her compound. And that early scene, 10 minutes in, where he goes, hey, you look familiar. Hey, you're Norma Desmond. You used to be big. And her unforgettable line, I am big. It's the pictures that got small. Of course, Eric von Stroheim, the noted director, he plays Max von Merling, who is her accomplice. I mean, any movie that starts out with the death of a chimp, they're having a funeral for a chimpanzee. You know, it's going to be weird and strange and brilliant. And you've got cameos from, again, unforgettable actors like Buster Keaton showing up in a poker game. Sunset Boulevard is a movie that only feels like it can come from Billy Wilder. As I said, he directed it, he co-wrote it, and it's a movie, it's one of the great inside Hollywood movies. By the way, it's available on the Criterion app. Thanks to my man, John LaBoy, hooking me up once again on the Criterion app. I have the DVD as well. But Sunset Boulevard's a movie about movies, okay? It's a movie about a silent aging film queen, what's happened to her life, and how strange her life has become. And it's funny, and it's strange, and it's disturbing. And it's, like I said, unforgettable. It's a movie that I think has grown in time, because at the time it did well, but I think more and more people saw it, they realized just how effective this movie was and what a metaphor it was for life itself. I mean, unlike the character she played, Gloria Swanson accepted the fact that movies didn't want her anymore, had moved to New York where she had worked on radio and later television. Although she had long before ruled out the possibility of a movie comeback, she was nevertheless highly intrigued when she got the offer to play the lead. When Gloria Swanson finished Norma's final scene, The Mad Staircase Descent, one of the most famous closing lines, by the way, ever in movie history. I mentioned the opening is famous when you see a floating, dead William Holden narrating his own life story. Well, the ending, of course, is unforgettable. When she comes down those stairs, that creepy, weird look at the camera. All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up. When she finished that scene, The Mad Staircase Descent, she burst into tears and the crowd applauded. Even though it wasn't the last scene filmed, Billy Wilder threw a party for her as soon as the shot was finished. Think about that. Movie's not over yet. We're throwing a party. That's how great she was in that movie. The character of Norma Desmond modeled on the fate of several leading actresses of the silent era. Mary Pickford lived in seclusion, away from the public eye, while both Mae Murray and Clara Bow had well-documented struggles with mental illness. Montgomery Clift, by the way, originally was cast as Joe Gillis, quit the production 2 weeks before filming began. He'd already played the kept woman of a wealthy older woman before. Also, one thing, as a practical joke during the scene where William Holden and Nancy Olsen kiss for the first time, Billy Wilder let them carry on for minutes without yelling cut. Eventually, it wasn't Wilder who should have cut, but Holden's wife happened to be on set that day. Billy letting him get after a little bit. Wilder went into production only 61 pages of the script finished, so he had to shoot more or less in chronological order. This was a first for Gloria Swanson, but proved a big boon in helping her character develop into character's descent into madness. Of course, she falls in love with him, will not let him leave, and it's a very dependent relationship. The movie's line, "All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up," or the number 7 movie quote by the American Film Institute. It is also one of the most frequently misquoted movie lines, usually given as, "I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. DeMille." The other line, "I am big, it's the pictures that got small," voted number 24 out of 100. Think about that. Think of any movie. They've got two of the most famous quotes in movie history in the top 25. Amazing. And one of the biggest upsets at the Academy Awards in history, Judy Holliday won the Best Actress Oscar in 1951 for Born Yesterday, beating Gloria Swanson in this film and Bette Davis in All About Eve. It was widely believed the two titans had canceled each other out, leaving the field clear for Holliday. In later interviews, Davis admitted she thought Swanson's work in the film was absolutely outstanding. It's a great, great film. Make sure you check it out. It's called Sunset Boulevard. Cecil B. DeMille, by the way, appears in the film on a studio set. This was the actual set of Samson and Delilah, which DeMille was making at the time. I love the inside jokes they have in this movie. Like, having Cecil B. DeMille in the movie is hilarious. By the way, when crew members asked Billy Wilder how he was going to shoot the barrel of Norma's monkey, one of the film's most bizarre scenes, he just said, you know, the usual monkey funeral sequence. Eric von Stroheim playing the butler as well. It's good, good stuff, man. Make sure you check out Sunset Boulevard, one of my all-time classics. One more story for you. Cecil B. DeMille agreed to do his cameo for a $10,000 fee and a brand new Cadillac. When Billy Wilder went back to him later to secure a close-up, DeMille charged him another $10,000. Even among directors, you can't get a discount from these guys. Kevin Hart crushed it right now. Enjoyed him in 60 Minutes. Here's both interviews we've done here on Cinephile.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The headlines remind us daily, the world is a dangerous place. The elites in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing. But you know better. And your gut knows that time is short to prepare for a world that is 4 missed meals away from chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped over 3 million families become more self-reliant and is the company Americans trust to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contain delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Secure at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200, plus get free shipping on all their Ready Hour 3-month emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. My Patriot Supply also has solar power generators, water filtration units, biomass stoves, heirloom seeds, and critical survival gear. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Kevin Hart is in the house. First and foremost, how about the multitasking? You are right now sending a tweet and a text as you're having this conversation.
Yes, I'm promoting my movie on the podcast and through Twitter simultaneously. When did I start having trouble with that word? Simultaneously? I don't know. I just pushed it.
What Now is in theaters right now.
Yes, it is.
And we have to start with this. Every time I go to the movies now, Kev, I see trailers, and I either see you or Ice Cube or The Rock, and I'm sick of it. We need to stop. I appreciate your work ethic. We need to take a break.
No, there's no break.
It's Kevin Hart.
There's no breaks. You take a break when you die. All right? I want to make every movie on the planet if I can.
I think you're doing it.
My goal is to have a movie plan and have 9 trailers of my movies that are coming out, and in between that, also come out and serve you your popcorn. That's my next goal.
The multi-talented Kevin Hart.
That's my goal.
I give you credit, because now the trailer, the ubiquitous Kevin Hart. Like, that's all the trailers
that's
say now.
That's you're exactly what we should say right there.
But I do give you credit, because it's the work ethic, and I know you were not always this superstar. You were not always this comedic icon, so I respect where you come from to get to this point. How rewarding is it now? What Now is 53,000 seat theater that you sold out. You financed this film yourself. How gratifying is it to now have achieved this success?
I mean, look, it's huge. At the end of the day, you don't do things to not be successful. You do things to make your mark and your imprint on history the best way you can. So for me, financing and funding and owning is definitely priority. It's definitely important. And I think what was really, really important was making sure that I got the best piece of product out to my fan base. You know, I've always went above and beyond and recreating myself and in trying to come back better than what I was before. So, and What Now, I just wanted to come out and I wanted to be above and beyond what I was when I did Let Me Explain. That's why I took my time with it. And to sell out a football stadium, 53,000 seats, that's nothing to be frowned upon. That's a big deal.
I love the episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, you and Jerry Seinfeld, in which you said to Seinfeld, you know, my daughter's asking, do we have a lot of money? Are we rich? And you asked Seinfeld for advice, because, you know, I tell him, I said, I'm rich.
I'm rich. Yeah, as he says. Yeah, I tell him, I'm rich. You're not. I am. That's one of the best things that Jerry's ever told me. I think it's tough love to the extreme right there.
Yeah. When you've made that joke in one of your stand-up specials, I believe it was either going with athletes or with rappers. Mm-hmm. Like, they will rent out all of Disneyland, and you're like, because it's one of the best bits of your routine. You go, well, I got a checking account.
You gotta explain your financial situation. You know, I think everybody sometimes assumes that you're where they are. So sometimes it's best to explain it so they know that you're not participating in the extreme spendage that they're taking a part in. You just gotta separate yourself. That's what I've learned.
And you're so gifted at using personal information in your stand-up, which is what the great stand-ups do. Richard Pryor, Chris Rock, yourself. Especially the jokes about your dad. On a serious note, your dad was a cocaine addict. You talked about the fact he was not there for you. And yet you've mined so much humor from it. Those bits about, all right, and like, hey, it's a long, you know.
Yeah.
All that stuff. Like, where is the kernel of truth, and where is Kevin Hart gone? All right, let me just use some humor to embellish it a little bit.
Well, it's all true. You know, I think the one thing
he showed up,
that,
no underwear, track pants, and a little girl said, what's that?
Listen, the one thing you got to do, you have to pull from a real place. You can't go and have everything be fiction. It's best to have some reality. And a lot of my stand-up is based off of my reality. And I think that's why my fan base has grown with me over the years, because I'm relatable. You see that the guy that you're dealing with is real. He's not faking. You know, he's 100% into whatever it is that he's saying. And I stand on that. And I'm never going to change from that. I'm always going to go above and beyond and delivering something that people can walk away from and not only relate to, but go, wow, I believe that. You know, I feel like I know this guy. That's the thing about stand-up comedy. You want to be relatable. And I am.
You definitely haven't proven that. Kevin Hart, What Now is in theaters right now. My buddy Cab, who's a huge fan of yours, he told me to ask you about when you first started doing stand-up, you used to perform in some male gentlemen's clubs.
Yeah, very true. Male strip club, by accident. I had no idea that that's what it was. I got there, and I thought they wanted me to dance. And I was like, I don't do that. You know, I'm not here for that. They said, no, you're on the break. We're going to bring you up on the break. So I performed. Definitely didn't do good. That's where one of my worst shows, because women had no interest in seeing a man with clothes on. I'm just going to guess. So once I was able to figure that out and move on, we went in the right direction. But, you know, it was a learning experience. At the end of the day, you need those things to know what's good and what's bad. And that was definitely bad.
But you are in great shape.
Yes.
So you could be, like, if Magic Mike XXXL comes out and they offered you a part, you wouldn't be averse to that, would you?
Yeah, well, I mean, now, you know, back then you weren't dealing with the same type of dude. You know, I was all over the place. I was a little mushy back then.
Like you said, you've had this self-belief in yourself, Kevin, and had this confidence and this drive and this determination. But I always am curious how people deal with critics. What do you say to critics who say, Kevin Hart's a really funny guy, but the movies aren't as good as his stand-up, which is so good?
I mean, look, everybody has an opinion. You can't be upset with somebody for thinking or feeling a certain type of way. They're an individual. You have your own brain. You're not programmed to think how people want you to think. You think for yourself. So I don't get into that. Nothing bothers me. I'm never upset. You know, some people are fans, some people aren't. The ones that aren't, they don't make me mad. I'm not like, oh man, you wrong. You know, you should like me. It is what it is. I get it. You know, hopefully one day I win you over and you say, oh man, you are a fan. If not, then, you know, I guess, I wasn't meant for you.
The positive approach to have. You have developed your own brand now. It's almost like Kevin Hart Inc. What is next? What is the goal here? Cause movies, stand up. Mm-hmm. Music?
I mean, look, you're looking at a guy who's touching all lanes. And like you said, from stand-up comedy to acting, from producing to writing to directing to, you know, eventually becoming your own brand to the point to where you're partnering with the major brands. I think starting my network, the Laugh Out Loud Network, is a big step. I'm still partnered up with Nike. I'm still signed as an athlete. Rally Health, I'm still a health ambassador. Animation films coming out. There's a lot going on in the Kevin Hart world, but it's never too much. I'm never too busy.
As busy as you are, I hope you save some time for some more roast, because you were awesome as the roast master.
Roast. Thank you, man.
At the Comedy Central roast, and I can't get enough of them. The most recent one, they just annihilated Ann Coulter the entire time. Yeah. I think we should have like an ESPN roast. Don't you think if you and Caliendo and a bunch of guys came here and we roasted Mike and Mike or whomever?
Oh, man. No. You guys, your roast would be way too easy. I wouldn't host it. It's way too easy.
What about like athlete road? If Tiger Woods would be incredible.
Way too many targets here. Way too many targets. It's a walking laptop fest here. It's very easy. I wouldn't do this. You could hurt some feelings for a long time here. I wouldn't do it.
And a shooting fish in a barrel. Last one for you. We do a segment on the show called Three Words. How would you describe Kevin Hart in three words?
Live, love, laugh. Guy who likes to live, guy who likes to love, guy who likes to laugh. That's it.
That is awesome. And since you've given us the gift of so many laughs, I have a gift here for you. This is our Cinephile, the Adnan Burke Movie Podcast. And since I'm Canadian, I rank movies in a Maple Leaf. So we got four Maple Leafs.
I like it.
You're a four to four talent.
I like it. I like the fact that you guys got a big budget around here. I got a T-shirt.
You're doing 15 appearances today, Kevin. I'm the only one who gave you a gift.
That's true. Right? That's true. And it's a size large, so it's something I can't wear due to the fact that I'm small. But this is it. Guys, thank you. You thought about me correctly, and you know, they say it's a thought that counts, and obviously you guys didn't think this through at all. But
we only have larges and extra larges.
It's fine. That's a good thing, guys. I'm glad you're prepared for all types of people to come through at your podcast and make sure you treat them correctly. This is amazing. I'll never forget it. This is a T-shirt that I'm definitely going to look at and go, those guys were jerks. They gave me a large shirt knowing that I'm a petite small, and he made sure to let me know he was Canadian, and he put some Leafs on the back. So this is good. This is real good for me.
Well, what now is in theaters now? Go check it out. Kevin Hart, thanks, man.
Thank you so much.
Time now to welcome back to Cinephile for the second time, actor Kevin Hart. Last time we were happy to have him here in studio in Bristol, Connecticut. Today he's busy promoting his new film, The Upside, which is in theaters today. I've seen it and really enjoyed it. Kevin, first and foremost, it's a remake, which I didn't realize until after I'd seen the film. Did you watch the original first, or you want to just focus on this script and this film from Neil Berger?
No, I was very aware of the first film. After, of course, getting a role, I wanted to educate myself on it, so I went and watched it. Was blown away. Amazing movie. And, you know, when reading our script, realizing that we had an opportunity to kind of modernize it and deal with some of the times of today. So it was a great opportunity for me. It was one that I jumped at.
You're playing a life auxiliary coach to a quadriplegic millionaire who is played by Bryan Cranston. It's based on a true story, Kevin. So did you seek out the person upon whom it's based, or did you talk to other life auxiliary coaches to try to get some of the movements down, or just what it's like working with somebody who is a quadriplegic?
Yes, of course. We had to go and spend a lot of time with the True Life Auxiliary and just kind of get an understanding of the job and how much went into the job. And I think the best thing about it was just having a high level of respect for the individuals that do it for a living, you know, because a lot goes into it. And I think being there for the patient that you're dealing with, the quadriplegic individual that you're dealing with, is what's most amazing, because they're there on a personal level and a personable level. You know, they're keeping those spirits high, and they're devoting all the time out their day to make sure that someone has every and anything that they need. I think it's an amazing position.
Yeah, the best part of this film is you really get to show off your dramatic chops. You're playing a former inmate who's trying to reconcile with his son. He's dealing with an estranged marriage. He's got to deal with child support, which he's been negligent on. Was that the primary appeal for you, Kevin, to do a movie where, listen, there's definitely some humor in there, and you got a great chemistry of Bryan Cranston, but you really get to show your dramatic chops this time?
Of course. You know, I think that right now the best thing in the world for me is saying I'm evolving in my craft. And, you know, to show that, to put that on display for my fan base to see and understand, it's a must. So to take that first step into the dramatic world of acting is something that I welcome. And I think, like I said, this will be the first of many more, you know.
That's awesome news. Bryan Cranston is one of my favorite actors. I'm sure you're a huge fan of his as well. You guys have real genuine chemistry in this film. That's the kind of stuff you can't fake. I'm sure off screen you've got some stories as well. What was it like working with Bryan?
Bryan Cranston is the best actor pound for pound I've ever worked with. He's unreal. You know, I mean, the guy is, he is truly a thespian. I mean, the man, you know, you're talking about the father from Malcolm in the Middle that's went on to do so many other things and has tapped into so many different other personalities and characters just that you couldn't even see or believe that he would be able to do from where he came from. So to watch him embrace work at the level that he does is definitely a treat. It's something that I think is the dopest thing ever to get to say that I worked with him personally. I got to work with Bryan Cranston and Nicole Kidman, and I was toe in toe with him. And I think that my game was elevated because of their background and because of how prepared they were and how much I put so much pressure on myself coming into it, because I didn't want to be unprepared. I wanted to make sure that I was well-versed and well-prepped so that I was never the problem or ever the delay. And I think it just made for great days on set.
Well, I think you acquitted yourself well. You definitely hung in there with them and showed that you're acting chops. Was Cranston a method actor? Was he walking around on set? Was he trying to really kind of inform playing a quadriplegic and do that as true to life as possible?
Say it again. Say the last part again.
Wait, was he being a method actor? Like, was he trying to, as if channel being a quadriplegic all the time?
Yeah. Opera?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. He really tried. Well, I won't even say try. He did, you know. Bryan said the whole time that, you know, he just wanted to relax as much as possible and not be tense and literally only use his face. And you know, he shut his body down, man. I mean, you know, I was moving him in and out of that chair. He wasn't helping. It was me. He was giving me dead weight every single time. There was not one moment where he was portraying Phil that he tried to, you know, I guess you could say, use his limbs at moments where he possibly could have to help me in certain times in certain scenes. Getting in and out of the bed, taking him in and out of that chair, putting him in the car, that's all stuff that he literally put on me. He made sure that I was doing it. He wouldn't help me.
Oh, that's amazing, man. I love the fact he was that committed. You mentioned Nicole Kidman. You guys have a really good chemistry, too. A fun refrain about baseball. She says you got three strikes, and the one time she gives you a strike, and you say, come on, that's a check swing. And later on, you and Bryan are talking about how much money he has, the character Phil, and you say, could you buy the Yankees? He says, no. And you say, what about the Mets? He goes, oh, yeah, the Mets, no problem. Well, as a sports fan, did you add that joke, or is that actually the script? Because I know you're a big
sports
fan.
That was actually well written in the script. That was in the script. Yeah. That was in the script, and I think it was one of my favorite lines, because it's something that, I mean, it still shows how much money he has, but it was just a shot, you know, two different baseball franchises, which I thought was really funny.
Yeah, I laughed hard at that one. Also, there's a lot of great opera in the film, Kevin, and I will say this, it's major pieces of opera. I don't know much about opera, but it is the opera that somebody might know as far as the major songs. I think one time you even asked, you're pretending to be a conductor, and you're saying, play the aria, the Queen of the Night. Did this movie deepen your appreciation for opera music?
I mean, for me, you know what? I'm not a opera fan, so. It made me respect it because we had to use so much of it. And in using it, of course, you ask questions and then you go search to get the knowledge. And I wasn't aware of Aretha Franklin's participation in opera and what she did with the song. What is it? Is it Norman Dorman? What is it?
Yeah, it played at the end. You're right. Where the queen actually sings opera. I don't know the name of
it. Yeah, where she sang it. And just the story behind why she had to sing it, how much time she had to prep for it. You know, it was like, wow. And I was blown away by it. And then just some of the artists that we met on set that came in for the scene where Phil did the party at the house, and they were singing opera. I mean, it was something to see. It was really a sight for us.
A lot of nice cars that Philip owns, and you get to drive a few of those. Which one was your favorite car to drive? Please don't tell me there's a stunt driver. They let Kevin Hart drive the
nice
cars.
No, that was me. Awesome. That was me. I was definitely driving that Ferrari. That was me.
Yeah, which was the nicest car, the Ferrari?
The Ferrari was a lot of fun.
And what type of Ferrari, to be specific? We have a lot of car fans here. I just want to make sure I got the right one.
Well, that was a 499, I believe.
Okay.
That was a 499.
That's getting it done, man. For 499. Yeah. I'm just thinking about, I love that episode you did with Seinfeld. You did the comedians and cars getting coffee. Because that, I just, when I think of cars and you and comedy, it all kind of blends together.
You know what, man? It's one of the best times that I've ever had talking to Jerry in that car. We had a great time.
Yeah, it's so natural, and you can tell the genuine chemistry with you guys. And when I think about, obviously, you become such a huge star now with acting, and this, like I said, check out The Upside, people, because this is a different side of Kevin Hart. But your comedy is so good. Like, stand-up, I have such respect for stand-ups. I think it's so hard to do, and the craft with which you did it, and the years you put into it. You know what I mean? People don't realize how many years you did this. It was an overnight sensation, and guys like you and Jerry and Chris Rock, and there's so many out there. Do you think stand-up is harder now, though, like with just the amount of social media and people who are willing to criticize you guys? And it's become a PC environment. I'm just thinking, Kevin, back in the day, listen, Richard Pryor, George Carlin, those guys were saying stuff that was offensive to people, too. That was kind of like why you went to the comedy club, because you could laugh at stuff and enjoy stuff. I feel like it's different now. How do you approach it?
You know what? I think that, of course, it is different. You know, I mean, it's different because of, I guess you could say the heightened sensitivity that we're all embracing today. You know, you forget that comedians are the people who say what you think. You know, a lot of people think about saying stuff, but they never will. Comedians are the people that are bold enough to say it and try to say it through a lens that would allow you to look at something and joke at it. And sometimes that stuff can come off distasteful. Sometimes it can come off disrespectful, aggressive. And if that is or was the case back then, people would just go, that's not for me, and they wouldn't watch that comic. Today you're seeing people stand and speak out on a comedian's approach to what they think is funny. Granted, that's the gamble of comedy. You're gambling all the time. It's, I think that this joke would be funny. And there's a chance that joke may not be funny. If it isn't, you go back to the drawing board and you try to figure out the funny version of a joke. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. It's that simple. You look at where comedy has come from, and then you look at where it's going. You have to ask yourself what is okay, because now you're putting comedy in a place to just be picked apart and poked at. And if that is the case, you'll see that you're ultimately putting yourself in a lose-lose situation as a supporter of comedy. Because after picking it apart, then it'll come off that, man, these guys are soft and they're not even talking about anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's one thing that you really have to look at. It's a crazy line that we're towing. And I mean, for me, it'll never affect me because my style of comedy is based on me, my life, my experiences. So I'm forever going to talk about them, and I'm always going to talk about it through the perception that I've lived it. So I don't have to be malicious or disrespectful, and you know, I've shown that in my style of comedy over the past decade.
Yeah, and I think that's the key, man. Like, in the past, you could just say, well, it's funny. I'm just trying to be entertaining. And now you got to go, wow, how many people am I offending? What vein is this going to receive by? And I think that would be incredibly frustrating if I was a stand-up. My buddy and I went to the Comedy Store in L.A. recently, and we were dying at this one guy. And part of what was so funny, and by the way, Bill Burr showed up out of nowhere. He was amazing. Is because it's offensive, because you're allowed, it's like a safe space. You can laugh at stuff here. And that doesn't mean that I agree with what's being said. It doesn't mean I support it. It's just funny. You know what I mean? In that moment, I'm going there to laugh. That's it.
Well, it's easy to look into something very, very deep. It's easy to overthink something and look past the simplicity behind it. Ultimately, a joke is said with the intent to simply make you laugh, not to hurt, not to affect. Right. That's the intent behind it. And like I said, sometimes you can get it wrong. Sometimes you can just not be funny, which is fine. Because if that's the case, you just got to figure it out and move on. It's that simple.
Well, you are often much, much more funny than not funny. I got to ask, as an ESPN broadcaster and somebody who's a big fan of your work, I know you're always at the NBA Celebrity All-Star Game, but here's what I ask you. I always do play-by-play for Celebrity Softball, which we always have on ESPN. So, like, in the last few years, you know, Miles Teller has played in it, J.K. Simmons, Jamie Foxx has done it the last few years. What's it going to take for you, Kevin Hart, to play in a little bit of Celebrity Softball?
What's it going to play? Oh, man. You know what? There's been talk about me doing 10 days with some NBA teams because of my success in the Celebrity Game. You know, they've been major contracts that have been offered to me, but I've turned them down. I'm getting old. You know, I'm almost 40 years old. My knees aren't as strong as they used to be. I mean, my jump shot is definitely still lethal and talked about worldwide. And, of course, you know, talks of me being one of the best point guards to ever do it.
Wow.
Still talked about. But, you know, it's something where I've said, hey, maybe it's just time to hang it up, man, and not go back. I don't want to mess up my legacy. I built a great one.
Well, listen, I think you've proven that with basketball, but how about baseball? Like, I want to see if you can take Jenny Finch deep. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to be able to see if you can do that in a baseball.
You know what? Now, baseball is a different story. Now, you put me out there. Now we're talking. Now I may send a couple over the fence. There's a chance of that.
All right, that's good news. You know what? Terry Crews, you know what an athlete Terry Crews is. He struck out, Kevin, in Celebrity Softball. So I'm not saying it's easier or harder than you think, but Terry Crews struck out. I know that wouldn't happen to you. I know you'd go deep.
No, it's not happening to me. We're two different levels of athlete. I'm the real deal.
Lastly, I know you've talked about it ad nauseum, and we're not going to get into this stuff at the Oscars. I know that you're not going to host it. You've spoken more than enough about it. What I do want to know is this. Would you be open to hosting award shows in the future, whatever they may be? Does that appeal to you at all?
I mean, you know, I can't say no. You know, there's definitely a chance that could happen. It comes in time, and when the time makes sense, I'll step up to whatever occasion fits with the need at the time. You know, but it's just embracing that moment when that moment comes.
The reason why is I'd love to have you host the ESPYs. What do you think? Huge Philly guy,
oh, man.
Right? Sixers,
well, you know,
Eagles.
I'm a big sports fan. You know, I'm a big sports fan, so I definitely will say never say never. The ESPYs is always a fun watch, so to be a part of it could be dope. You know, like I said, it's just all about the timing.
Where are you going to be watching Eagles Saints this Sunday? Philly going to shock the world.
Oh, my God. When I tell you, I'm so excited. In my room with a uniform on. That's where I'm watching the game.
And Nick Foles jersey?
Full fledged uniform on.
Yeah. Fletcher Cox uniform. Tell me, what jersey are you wearing? Cunningham?
I'm going to go. I go Cunningham. I go back in the day.
I love it, man. That's awesome.
Back in the day. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Oh, I love Randall Cunningham. Love the Eagles. Love your work. Kevin, thanks so much for coming on Cinephile, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
All right. Thanks once again to Kevin Hart from 7 or 8 years ago. Thanks to all of you for listening here on Cinephile. Thanks to Chris Cody, as always, bringing it. Cody, it's been a pleasure, my man. I know, like I said, you'll still dip in and out, but best of luck with the Levitard Show. Like I said, I know how busy you are with your career, with your life. You're a great dad. You're a great husband, great father. So I appreciate you having on here and all the great laughs you've had, pal. I appreciate you very, very much.
You're the best, man.
All right. Thank you to Chris Cody. Thanks to all of you. Cinephile continues. Probably taking a week off next week. What the hell? Going to take a little time off. We've got about 4 straight months here. Figure things out here at Metalark, but we will continue. More Cinephile on the way. 320 episodes in the books. Tennis movie coming out called Challengers. Apparently opening, just opened this weekend. I'm going to go check it out. Zendaya, the love triangle. Tennis movies coming up soon here on Cinephile. I'll see you at the movies.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.